Testing. 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Testing. 2, 3, 4.
Just give me a second.
You good?
Hello.
Better because it's long walk. I may want to go till Marina Sands today, but I'll not go on the top because even the wall is very good. There's a night show next to Louis Vuitton. Outside that I want to see. Yeah, I can go with you. Okay.
Hi, everybody. Hi, everybody. I'm right back here behind Dan. I'm right behind David. So we're going to go right into this. You know, on our agenda, we said we were going to have the representatives from the nominating committee with us this afternoon. Stefan, Ron, Joette, and Gia. Joette and Gia are in the back of the room. And Hans, who's hiding from us. So Joette and Gia are the staff liaisons to the nominating committee. And with that, I'm going to hand you over to Stefan to begin this.
Thanks, Janice. Don't worry. Long day for all of us. Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk to the fellows, explain a little bit about the process of the nominating committee. My name is Stefan van Gelder. I'm the chair of the 2015 nominating committee, and sitting next to me is Ron Andruff, the chair-elect, which means that he's expected to be the chair for next year. So his role this year is to learn the ropes and be prepared for to lead the committee next year. Now, I've got a few slides that I want to show you just to explain where we are and what we're doing. But I will say that the process of the nominating committee, I think, is an extremely valuable one in the ICANN community in general. Nominating committees are not experiments that are limited to ICANN. I mean, they are governance vehicles that are used in corporations all over the world or organizations that may seek outside help to do their work and may seek to do the best possible recruitment processes that they can. So ICANN has not invented the process. What we're doing here is we are looking to try and bring outside blood, people that may not be regular ICANN people or that may not have as deep knowledge of ICANN as some of the people here. We're trying to bring them to leadership positions, and we recruit for four bodies on the in the ICANN ecosystem. The board, obviously, the GNSO Council, the CCNSO Council, and the At-Large Advisory Committee, ALAC. I don't know how familiar you are with the ICANN structure and the acronyms, etc., so I'll just waffle on, and if you have questions about any of what I'm saying or the acronyms or what I'm describing, then I'm sure you'll ask them. I believe we have the slides ready now. I don't know where they're being projected. Well, I can see them, but you can't, which is not as useful as it might be.
I'll describe them.
It'll be like dinner set for beginners.
I think it's going to. Yeah, it's coming up, but you can't see it properly. But it will. Macs are supposed to be simple, so it should work pretty soon. So at least now you know you're at ICANN 52 in Singapore. That's useful. Perfect. Thanks. So let me just work this for you. This is just who we're recruiting to this year. The nominating committee doesn't do the same recruitment every year. So the committee is a committee that changes every year in terms of the task it is it has to accomplish. This year, we are recruiting three members of the ICANN board. Overall, it's a 16-member board, and we recruit eight of those 16 members. The nominating committee for 2015 is also recruiting three members of the at-large advisory committee. That is the body within ICANN that welcomes the users, so it speaks for the users at large, and at large has an advisory committee that helps represent the voices of the users. And on that advisory committee, the NOMCOM puts a certain number of people, and this year we're looking for one person from the Africa region, one person from Asia Pac, and one person from Latin America. We're also recruiting to the GNSO Council, the GNSO being ICANN's policymaking body for the generic namespace, so anything from the legacy GTLDs like .com to the new GTLDs like .sexy. And the last recruitment that we're making this year is to the CCNSO Council, and that is the CCNSO being the Country Codes Name Supporting Organization. That is the body that looks at policies and best practices for the country code space. So just to give you a snapshot of geodiversity on the board, I think it's important to remember or to know that
ICANN looks at geodiversity very carefully, and there are rules in the ICANN bylaws to ensure that all the regions of the world are represented to some extent, and that includes the board. So for this year, this is a snapshot of where we are now. And if you look at the Asia-Pac region, you'll see that there's five members of that region already. Now, that's a maximum. We cannot exceed that. So the rules prevent us from exceeding that. So the nominating committee this year, if we get applicants from the Asia-Pac region wanting to apply to the board, we won't be able to select them for the board. But I'll explain in a minute, maybe I'll let Ron explain in a minute, that there are other choices to be made there. And in the other regions, you can see on this slide, there are still vacancies in North America, Latin America, Africa, so there, and Europe. So there's still lots of possibilities there. This is a NOMCOM cycle. So this explains to you a little bit about how the NOMCOM works. Each NOMCOM is different. Each NOMCOM term lasts a year, and we work through five phases. We have a preparatory phase, which has been done this year. It's already finished. We're now in the recruitment phase, and that is a call for applications. So right now, at this very minute, any of you in this room or anyone that you know that might be a suitable fit can apply through the NOMCOM to be part of this ICANN experiment and to take up a leadership position such as the ones that I've described earlier on. That opportunity is open until mid-March. In mid-March, the application period closes, and we then start to assess from the pool of candidates that we've received. So, it may look a bit daunting, but in case you have an interest, have a look at the NOMCOM website. There'll be some links coming up in a minute. And why not try your hand and apply? This is a snapshot of where we are today in terms of applications. So just to explain a little bit more of about our process, if you look at the first column on each bar chart, the first column to the left, that's the first choice. That means that people have applied, 43 people have applied to us so far, bearing in mind the proceedings are not closed as I just described, asking for the board as their first choice. But it also means that, for example, if you look at the GNSO bar chart, 28 people have applied asking for the GNSO as their second choice. What that means in practice is that you can apply for just one position, or you can apply for up to four positions because we recruit for four bodies. And the usefulness of doing that is that, say, you are a good candidate, the NOMCOM thinks you're a good candidate, but not quite up to scratch for one position, you may be considered for another. But the NOMCOM cannot consider you for another if you haven't ticked that box. So if you or other people are thinking of applying, do tick several boxes. Do, you know, put maybe the board as first choice and GNSO as second, so that you're giving the NOMCOM the opportunity to consider you for multiple jobs. That's it. There's a few links there. There's a lot more to explain, but I want to give Ron an opportunity to speak. I want to give you an opportunity to answer questions. So I'll just end by saying that we, the NOMCOM members, wear red lanyards to identify ourselves to the community. And if you don't have an opportunity now to answer to ask your question, or if you want to ask questions later, do go up to anyone that has one of these red lanyards in the corridors and ask them questions about the NOMCOM process. We're all here to help and answer your questions. Thank you. Ron, please.
Thank you, Chair. I want to tell you, you're the most polite group we've spoken to all day. And applauding for the chair is something I have observed for the first time with you. So it says a lot about you as individuals and as a group. And I'm quite sincere when I say that. I have had the pleasure of serving as a nominating committee member for 2 years before I was elected by the board of directors of ICANN to become the chair-elect. I've served with Stefan in that capacity. He was also a member, and he was the chair-elect last year, and now he's the chair this year. And so I think he would be the first one to echo the comment I'm about to make. One of the things that we have observed as members and as now in leadership positions within the nominating committee is that fellows have always been very much appreciated by the nominating committee. And fellows find their way onto the various bodies, whether it's ALAC or CCNSO and so forth, because you people come to ICANN, you learn about ICANN, you engage with ICANN, and when you read through the resumes, CVs, and the other information that we request, it shows there's a real appetite to engage. And so if I look across the board of all the different types of applicants that we see, fellows seem to score very high, and members enjoy what we see. So it's a commendation to you for having made these steps, and it's a commendation to Janice for having guided you very well in this process. So thank you for that. I also would like to make the point that when we, when Stefan showed you, could we maybe go back on the slide, Stefan, to the one? That's it. No, that's it. So if you look here, as our chair just announced, these are people who have applied for a form to be sent to them that they could make an application. We do not know yet how many people we will have. Some may finish, some may not finish their form and submit it by the close date. So if you look at CCNSO, for example, there's only 8 people that have applied for that space. ALAC, 15 have applied for that space. GNSO, 11 people. So that's not a very big pool of people for our members of the committee to select from. So if you're at all encouraged by this, I would hope that you would consider looking to sending an email, or we'll put the slide back up where how you can approach it. It's on the ICANN website. And just to ask for an application request form and take that step. It's an amazing process to work in the nominating committee because it's a very collegial environment. We basically all come from different parts of the environment or the body of ICANN, if I could put it that way. But we check our constituencies or our stakeholder groups at the door. We walk through that door and we kind of lock arms and we say, okay, we've got to now reach out and do the work to find the best possible people to lead the organization forward. The only way ICANN can grow is through new leadership, growing and carrying it on. So this is something that we would look to you to do. So I'm speaking to you now personally, but I'm also thinking when you go back to your home countries and your home cities, you have a Rolodex. You have a list of friends and colleagues and people that you know. And maybe they're not even friends, but they're people who you think might be very good leaders within ICANN. Reach out to them and invite them also to consider looking at this opportunity within ICANN, because it's in this way we will get more Africans. In this way we'll get more Latin Americans. As you saw on the slide, we have today 2 board members from Africa, and we have 1 from Latin America, Caribbean. So this is not enough. We would like to see that those particular parts of the world are better served. So we look for geodiversity, we look for gender diversity, we look for a lot of types of diversity, but that will not trump having the skill set to do it. Most important, though, that we actually are looking for these things. So we encourage you all to reach out to your colleagues back in your home countries and your home cities. I think that's all I wanted to share. Chair, thank you.
Thanks very much, Ron. Let's just open it up for questions. I don't know if there are any. Sir, please.
We have the mic. One second.
Hello?
For the record's sake, I nominated somebody to apply, and I'm told he did apply, actually, for the CCNSO slot from Africa. He's a friend from Zimbabwe.
Wonderful.
Perfect. Thank you very much. There's someone something? Just behind you.
Can I ask something?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
What I miss here is the minimum eligibility criteria that you seek. So if you could highlight that. That may encourage many of us to consider that. So you see, so
thank
you have
you
to go through a process to apply. So that'll be nice to have that minimum criteria.
Thank you for the question, because it helps me tell you that on the NOMCOM website there's a lot of information that we try and put, both about the application process, the work of the NOMCOM, and the skill sets. So there's no minimum criteria. But there is a skill set that comes from the community. So those four bodies that we're recruiting to, we ask them every year, and they often answer. We ask them for skill sets. And we say, you know, what are you looking for this year? That might change next year. But what are you looking for this year in terms of, for example, CCNSO candidates? You know, do you need someone with finance skills? Do you need someone with, I don't know, diplomatic drafting expertise, drafting skills, whatever? So there's no bar that's set that people have to reach. It's a question of having certain skills that fit with what the people need, what the groups need. I saw another question in the back.
I'm Gilan, fellow from Mauritius. In fact, you just replied to my question, because I've been seeing a little card this morning about applying for leadership position. I'm hearing you about reaching people. So I was just wondering about the criteria for this, because I believe that the candidate should be people who are active in the community and their region. So there are specific criteria then.
Yeah. I active in their committee. I think it's also a learning process. And I think, you know, the NOMCOM is a way for people to take the time to learn ICANN. By that, I mean that, you know, a lot of people focus on the board, but that would be a mistake in my view. The other three groups are just as important, and often they're a lower pressure way into the ICANN world. So I think, you know, if you do have contacts, if you do have networks, or if you yourselves are interested in applying, I would encourage you to look at these other positions as well, and not to feel that the board is the only way in, but to look at those other positions as providing different skill sets too. So, for example, the skill set for ALAC will obviously not be the same as the skill set for the CCNSO. So that opens up a lot of possibilities for people to apply. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Awal. I'm a fellow from Bangladesh. So if there is no application for any organization, then what the NOMCOM select the representatives then, if there is no application? Thank you.
It's a good question, but the fact is that there is a flurry of activity that happens. As the window starts to close, all of a sudden we see a flood of applications start to come in. So in about a year and a half, well, 2 years ago now, I think we had kind of a record high. It was about 125 or so applications. I'm not sure, but it was a larger number. My point being is that we expect we'll be over 100 applications or so for the various positions this year. The key here is that we're looking for, the reason we're meeting with you today is we're looking to have deeper pools for each one of these positions, so that the committee can really find the best leader to fit the role for this year. And as our chair has said, each year these dynamics within ICANN change. And so what you may not necessarily be selected this year, but it's not to say that the next year on, if you've been active in ICANN and be doing different things, that you might not be better set, your skill set might not have improved, and you may possibly be that candidate the following year. So it's really important to understand that. But there will be enough people to select from. In my experience, there's always been enough. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Spencer Thomas from Grenada, part of the Caribbean. The question I want to ask is geographic diversity you mentioned. And what will constitute, a process question, what will constitute geographic diversity? Is it country of birth or country of residence or nationality? And how do you have a verification process?
That's a good question. Thank you for asking it. There are two parts of the question. First of all, it's declarative. So the candidate names a region that he feels he fits into. And it depends, as to the second part of your question, it depends which body the candidate is applying to, because there's actually higher... there's more due diligence done on board members than on the other candidates. So, for example, if you're applying for the GNSO and you're applying from a certain region, you live in that region, you're a resident of that region. It's not birth necessarily, it's residency.
Domicile,
thank you. Then you just declare that you're domiciled in that region. Now, there may be or may not be checks, but there will be checks if you are applying for the board, because once we select for the board, what then happens is that there's due diligence done on those applicants that we've selected. And we will, well, not us, but there is a check done to ensure that they are... who they say they are, and that they do come from that region. So that is looked at. Please go ahead.
I'm Babaram Aryal from Nepal, first time fellow. I was also supposed to ask a similar question, and I'll explain a little bit more on that. For example, Nepal is a very small country, and it's situated in between China and India. It's sandwiched by China and India. So is this voting pattern, what kind of pattern is there? Voting, like business is in India and China, it has very big business, and then Nepal may have very low business of, this economy. So what kind of voting pattern is there? How you vote an individual?
This is not the process. Effectively, we have five regions within ICANN. And in your case, you would fall into the Asia-Pacific region. It's not a question of the size of your nation. It's not a question of any of that. It's a question of the qualifications that you bring, and do you fit the needs that are that you're applying for. It's as simple as that. It really comes down to the individual, him or herself, not to how big or how small your country comes from.
We're close to the end of the session, so if I can maybe ask for one or two more questions and then let you get on to your next speaker, which I can see in the back already waiting for us.
Thank you very much. My name is Catherine. I'm an ICANN fellow from Uganda. Mine is really, I'm curious, is 1 year enough for the elected leaders to fulfill their responsibilities, including orientation and then actually doing the... Oh, okay. Okay, for the one...
I was just showing you the terms. I'm kind of put you off your question there. I think it's a very good question. There's two parts to it, once again. If you're asking about the terms of the people that we're selecting, as you can see, the terms are different. The term lengths are different per body. So, for example, the board is 3 years, the GNSO Council is 2 years. There's no one-year terms that we select to. However, a follow-on to your question might be, but what about the terms of the people on the nominating committee? Because the committee changes every year, as I mentioned earlier on. So basically, each term is 1 year. And in the same way, as you can see that we're building up leadership, that there's succession planning in the leadership,
from year to year. So I was NOMCOM chair-elect last year. Ron is this year and will be chair next year. There's a question in the community at the moment as to whether those term lengths should be changed or should be kept the same, should be extended to 2 years so that there's a possibility of building and retaining experience or not. So that is an ongoing question. I think you've touched on something that is, you know, the community is already looking at. And term lengths, whatever the bodies that we're talking about, is always a question because it's a balance between having the experience, having the time to build the experience, and also not having term lengths that are so long that they prohibit new people coming in. So there is a balance there that we need to find.
Is there one more?
If there's one more question, yeah. Well, two more then quickly.
Hello, my name is Mohamed Jai, fellow from the Gambia. My question is, I would like to know exactly who are the individuals that constitute the NOMCOM, and what's the process of having these individuals?
Yep, thanks. So this is not a slide that I had, but on the website you'll see the NOMCOM composition. Most of the committee is elected by the various ICANN groups, so GNSO, CCNSO, ALAC, they all elect to the NOMCOM. Some are selected. Ron and myself are selected by the board. The associate chair, which is a third leadership position, is selected by the chair, so myself for the current year. And there are also non-voting members that are there to represent certain parts of the community. The detail you can find on the NOMCOM website, nomcom.icann.org.
I think there was one more gentleman in the middle who wanted to ask a question.
Thanks. Hi, my name is Neil Checo, and I'm a fellow from the Dominican Republic. I'm a little bit confused. When a person got selected to take part in the NOMCOM, it's more like a volunteer work that you have to share with your workload back in your country at your job, or what is it? I need that explanation about that.
If I understand your question, are you asking about the nominating committee itself, or are you asking about the people the nominating committee appoints?
No, the one that you are asking for a position.
Okay, very good. Yeah. So let's just take, for example, the at-large advisory committee, because I think that would be a very good one. So in Latin, you see there's a Latin America person that we would select. That Latin American person will come and serve on the at-large committee. So they will come to the ICANN meetings, they'll participate in the calls, they'll do the various things. Because they're based in Latin America, they would also do outreach and try to encourage more people to be involved. We all do that, but it is absolutely volunteer work. And so as I'm a volunteer and Stefan is a volunteer and so forth, we do this work. Now Janice is with staff, so she supports us and she supports you. Our support staff is Joette and Gia. So they're the ones that kind of help us do our work and enable our work. But otherwise, we're all volunteers.
Yeah. Just to say thank you very much. We've had some very good questions, and you know, I want to echo what Ron said earlier on. You're a great crowd and community to speak to, because there's an obvious level of a high level of interest. There's feedback, there's interaction, and it just drives us on more to do this community volunteer work, which does take time. It does take time out of your personal lives. It does take time out of your professional lives. But it's also fascinating work. It means that we get to meet people like yourselves. It's unique positions to try and help the internet be what it is for the world today. So, you know, we all feel it's a very, very high responsibility job, and that we have an extremely important task in choosing the right people to continue this internet governance experiment that is ICANN. So thank you very much for your time. It's a pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you.
And my roomie, Joette. Joette, we have three fellows currently sitting in positions, one CCNSO and two at large, I believe. Leon, Baran. Thank you, Joette. Steve, come on down. And I can offer you a seat, or you can say you've sat too long today and get a walking mic, whichever you prefer.
Well, good afternoon. It's nice to meet all of you, and I look forward to meeting some of you in person before we finish up this evening. It's end of a long day and a long meeting here at ICANN. I know you start at 6:45 in the morning, so I don't necessarily need to take the whole slot here, but let me just tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Steve Metallitz. And I'm the vice president of the intellectual property constituency at ICANN. I'm a lawyer in private practice, and I practice in Washington, D.C. I'm a copyright lawyer primarily. I do a lot of work also on international legal issues. And I've been involved in ICANN since 1999. All at that time within the intellectual property constituency. I've served as its president, I've served as its vice president, and also as a representative to the commercial stakeholder group, which is a group of which the IPC is a part. Back when ICANN was founded, in the charter documents of ICANN, they identify seven constituencies that would be participating or through whom the community would be participating in the work of ICANN, particularly having to do with domain names. And as you know, that's not everything ICANN does, but by most measures, it's a very large percentage of what ICANN does, and it's the part of ICANN that I've been involved with, not the IP numbers or the protocol parameters, but the domain names. So at that time, as I said, there were seven constituencies, and one of them was intellectual property. It's been through a number of changes since then. One of the constituencies was the country code constituency that broke off and formed its own supporting organization. And there have been other changes in the structure of ICANN, but the intellectual property constituency has always been part of that structure. So you may ask why the folks who founded ICANN identified intellectual property along with the internet service providers and the business constituency and non-commercial constituency and so forth as one of the groups that needed to be represented. And I think it was because people understood that many of the decisions ICANN would be making particularly in the domain names area, would have a big impact on intellectual property. Intellectual property is really an umbrella term that we use to describe a series of legal rights that are recognized worldwide, that are the subject of very well-accepted international norms. As I said, I'm primarily a copyright lawyer, which deals with creative expression and works of authorship. But the type of intellectual property that's most often discussed within ICANN is trademark protection, which is signs and symbols that are used to designate the origin of a good or service, and so that the consumers will know that when they're buying something or getting a service, who's providing it to them, and they can associate that product or service with the reputation of the brand owner. Obviously, when domain names came on the scene, this had a big impact on the world of trademarks, because you could have a domain name where the second-level domain, part to the left of the dot, was the same as a trademark. Could be a trademark that's recognized just in one country. Could be a trademark that's recognized around the world. And there was obvious potential for confusion and for misleading consumers as to whether, if you had Pepsi.com, were you actually associated with PepsiCo that is the trademark owner for that brand that's known worldwide, just to give one example. So this is why intellectual property has been part of the ICANN fabric ever since its founding, because of this recognition that the decisions ICANN would make about how the domain name system would be structured and how it would be administered could have a big impact on the intellectual property rights, particularly of trademarks, but also, and we can get into this further, of other types of intellectual property rights. So a lot of the activities that the intellectual property constituency has been most associated with really have been dealing with this question of the impact of the domain name system on trademarks. One of the first was the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, UDRP. You have heard so many acronyms over the last few days. That one may or may not have come up, but it's actually one of the, greatest accomplishments of ICANN is that it put into place long ago, back in 1999, an international arbitration system for trying to deal with these cases where someone registers a domain name that is the same as or is confusingly similar to a trademark. And it's an international arbitration system that's now adjudicated thousands of cases. It's been pretty well accepted. There's a pretty well-established body of law that has come from it. And that's something that ICANN has really contributed to the world of internet governance, if you will. A lot of these issues also ramped up again starting about 10 to 11 years ago when ICANN first embarked on, actually for the third time, ICANN embarked on a program to launch new generic top-level domains. The first two rounds had been quite small, just a handful of names in each case, but the round that ICANN began working on in about 2005, of course, is the one that is still underway now and has led to over 1,900 applications, and I guess the final number of new generic top-level domains will be about 1,300. This obviously presents a lot of challenges to the intellectual property system, and so the IPC, the intellectual property constituency, was very involved in developing new mechanisms for dealing with these new challenges. And some aren't very well known. There's one called the Uniform Rapid Suspension System, kind of an accelerated way of dealing with the very clearest cases where there was impact on trademarks. And also, as a result primarily of pressure from the Governmental Advisory Committee, ICANN incorporated into the program a series of what are called public interest commitments that all of the new GTLD registries had to take on. And that includes, I mean, it covers a lot of things, but it includes having a system in place for receiving complaints about use of a domain name in the new top-level domain in order to carry out copyright infringement, trademark infringement, counterfeiting, piracy, other types of intellectual property offenses. So it was really the first time that ICANN said that the registries have some responsibility through their relationships with the retail registrars to try to deal with this problem. That's a new innovation in the ICANN framework, and it remains to be seen how effective it's going to be. But there are many questions about the new GTLD round that still remain to be resolved. So that's just an example of a couple of the issues that the IPC has been involved with over the years. Like the other constituencies, and I know you've had presentations from some of the other GNSO constituencies, generic names constituencies. So we have a website, ipconstituency.org. You can find some information there about our bylaws and officers and so forth. We meet by telephone every month, and of course we hold public meetings here at the ICANN meeting. The last one was in this room, and it ended about 90 minutes ago. So I feel like I've spent a lot of time in this room already today. It's about a 3.5-hour meeting. We had a lot to cover. So it's open. That meeting, of course, is open to anybody. The eligibility for joining the intellectual property constituency is laid out on our website. Basically, we're looking for people that are working in the field of intellectual property. One thing that distinguishes the IPC from most of the other constituencies is that most of the members of the IPC, not all of them, are lawyers. And that's because a lot of the people working in the field of protecting intellectual property have law degrees and they may not be practicing law, but they are well-versed in the legal concepts of intellectual property. But not all of our members are lawyers, and we have individual members. We also have a lot of association members. So the major legal associations of practitioners in intellectual property law have representation within the intellectual property constituency. And then we have organizations that are not organizations of lawyers. For example, the Motion Picture Association, which represents the major producers of filmed entertainment, TV, movies, they're there because, of course, their entire business depends on copyright protection. And the Internet presents many opportunities for that industry and many challenges for that industry. And decisions made by ICANN do have a big impact on the industry and their ability to protect their intellectual property rights online. So that's another organization that is a member of our constituency. We do have members from different regions of the world. I think one area where we have not done a very good job is in the geographic diversity of our active membership, but it's something that we're always attempting to improve upon and get more active members from Latin America, from Africa, and other regions that are underrepresented in our ranks right at the moment. One of the big challenges we have, like I think all the other constituencies in the GNSO, is that we are a volunteer organization, and there's an enormous amount of work that we face, and getting high levels of participation consistently is very difficult sometimes. That's a challenge that we're facing and that we've brought up along with other constituencies within the ICANN framework to try to figure out, are there ways to prioritize the work that we have to do, identify which things have to be done now, which ones are the most important to deal with, and be able to organize our work better, use good technology to try to be more efficient in our work. These are challenges that we have, but I don't think we're at all unique within the ICANN framework in facing these. So that tells you a little bit about our constituency and about what we do, what the issues are that we're involved in. And I'd be because I know I was here in the last few minutes of your session, and I know you have a lot of good questions, so I'd be happy to try to answer them, and we'll you see, it starts already. You go. So do you want to?
And I want to mention to Alfred, I have your question, but better that you get on the mic to ask it when it comes around.
My name is Toilem Godwin. I'm a new fellow from Kenya. I work with the Kenyan CCTLD. From your name, I can see it's intellectual property constituency of ICANN generic names supporting organization. Does that mean that you don't represent, you don't have representation from the CCTLD? And also, I know there are issues with jurisdiction, but for me, I think still generic name, you still have issues with jurisdiction. So why maybe you have chosen the section of generic names and not CCTLDs?
That's an excellent question, and it goes back to the history that I was talking about. In the first in ICANN 1.0, there was no CCNSO, there was no GNSO, there was a names council, and was supposed to deal with all issues dealing with names. So that would mean issues arising in the country code world as well as in the generic world. In about 2002, 2003, we had ICANN 2.0. And one big change that was made then was to recognize that the CCs have unique problems, unique issues, have a different, very different relationship with ICANN, since most of them don't have contractual relationships with ICANN. And therefore, that was when the CCNSO was created. But all the other constituencies that had been in the Names Council remained behind, if you will, in the GNSO as it was set up. I think your question is very well taken, because obviously these issues don't disappear simply because it's a CCTLD involved. But there are a couple of differences. One is, I think your question suggests, one of the big problems in the GTLD world is that it's a global forum. Every GTLD essentially is accessible in every country where the internet is accessible. So you do have these issues of which law to apply and how to come up with uniform or consistent policies across the entire GTLD environment. In the CCTLDs, they're obviously associated with one country, by their name at least, and by their governance, and therefore the question of what law applies can be simpler in some cases. Now, that was probably more true in 2002, 2003 than it is today, because today we have CCTLDs, as you know, they really act just like generic, like global TLDs. They're essentially accessible to everybody in the world. Of course, everybody can reach them, but also people from all over the world can register in them. So that distinction really has been blurred. And I think there probably are a lot of intellectual property issues where we might be able to provide some insights to CCs. But those issues are not generally resolved at ICANN. Those are generally handled by each CC individually, or if they choose to develop best practices and work together, it's totally different from the framework for GTLDs. But there have been suggestions over the years that, in fact, we really shouldn't have intellectual property as a constituency of one supporting organization. We should have some other organizational means, like having an intellectual property advisory committee that could comment on or have input to policies all across the range of ICANN's activities. And if we did that, then I think that would answer your question. But there are historic reasons why it's been part of the GNSO. I hope that helps.
Okay. My name is Paul Moshene. I'm from Kenya. My question is intellectual property challenges you'll have with the new GTLDs, given that some of them are in contention, and even if they were delegated, a good example would be .Amazon. So if, for example, .Amazon was delegated, just supposedly, and there will be contention between Amazon.com and also perhaps Latin American countries where the Amazon rainforest goes through. So what challenges have you seen so far with the new GTLDs, IPR challenges you've seen?
Well, the geographic names challenge is a major one, and ICANN tried to anticipate that. Of course, there was an application for .amazon, and it was done by Amazon, the company, which has a trademark on Amazon in many countries around the world, including most of the countries in Latin America, in South America, recognize Amazon as a trademark of that company. ICANN tried to anticipate this by having some rules about character strings that could not be applied for, such as the names of countries. And there's a UN list, and so there was a standardized list, and so therefore .Kenya would not be something that someone could apply for as a generic top-level domain. The problem, of course, is that Amazon is not on that list because Amazon is not a country. And it's a geographic feature, or it's the English name for a geographic feature. It is not even called that in most of the countries where it appears. But it wasn't something that ICANN, in the rules that it came up with, dealt with. And for that reason, when Amazon, the company, applied for .Amazon, there were objections from some of the countries in South America, where the Amazon River runs. And the ultimate result was that Amazon, the company, ultimately withdrew the application. You know, the application was not successful. But that whole issue of geographic names is still very much alive and very much a subject of discussion for the next round of new GTLDs, whenever that comes. And I know there's a program, there's a session later this week that will talk about that, and there'll be some people from governments and people from the elsewhere in the community. We feel quite strongly about this within the intellectual property constituency that these rules ought to be consistent with international law, and there aren't any international legal principles that would give national governments monopolies over the names of geographic features or even of provinces or towns or anything within their territory. I think the international law framework is quite clear on that, but that is really the issue that's now being discussed with the GAC or with some GAC members and with the intellectual property constituency. So we've tried to bring our expertise in international legal standards to bear on this and provided our opinion on that question.
Hello. It's on? Okay. I am Dusan Popovic, a fellow from Serbia.
And you were here in this room for some of that meeting.
Constituency session. Paul was mentioning the problems with dispute resolution regarding new GTLDs, but I would like to go backwards. I have an impression that we started introducing new GTLDs and we are having experiencing problems with the dispute resolution regarding, for instance, the registrations on CCTLD within CCTLD. So there is a group of national registries which adopted UDRP and the other group which developed their own ADRs. So these alternative dispute resolution policies differs at least in a procedural way from UDRP, and some differs in regarding substantive rules. So do you think that ICANN should make it mandatory through contracting with national CC registries that they all adopt UDRP at least? It could be done. So my question is whether the intellectual property constituency took a position on that. If not, what is your personal position on that as an IP expert? Thank you.
I think the position, that's a good question. The position of the intellectual property constituency has evolved over time on this. I think if you asked that question of us 12 years ago or so, we would say we want the CCTLDs to basically operate under the common standards that are in effect for the GTLDs, not just with dispute resolution, but on other issues as well, like who is, and the management of these registration databases. That clearly is not the case, and it's not going to be the case, because the CCTLDs do not even have, in most cases, a contractual relationship with ICANN. So in theory, your suggestion may be a very good one. It would certainly be a lot of advantages in having greater uniformity in these dispute resolution practices. But in practice, ICANN really doesn't have the authority to bring all of the CCTLDs into that into line and have them adopt the same procedures. Now, some of that can be done through other means. I mean, the World Intellectual Property Organization has published a couple of, which is the UN agency that deals with intellectual property matters, has published a number of best practice documents, if you will, for CCTLDs and encourage them to have the UDRP or to have something close to that. And in fact, WIPO administers the UDRP for a number of CCTLDs that have chosen to do so. But there's no, in the absence of any international norm on this, such as a treaty, WIPO can't force the CCTLDs to do this, and it can have best practices, and a number of CCTLDs have adopted those best practices. But beyond that, there's not much that can be done, I don't think.
My name is Rohana, first-time fellow from Sri Lanka. Today in the GATT meeting, there was a discussion on whether the country name can be used as the second-level domain. Mm-hmm. So my question is, can we consider country name as the intellectual property of a particular country?
That was really the question that we tried to address in our response to the GAC proposal for the next round, and it's a very extensive paper, but it goes through this question in detail. The short answer is no. Countries don't have an intellectual property right in the names of their countries. They there's no basis for that within the Paris Convention, which is the main international norm for trademarks, and that. I don't know exactly how many countries are members, but well over 100. So we have a paper that kind of goes through that as a legal analysis. But the short answer is no, and we think that it would be any policy that ICANN comes up with in this area should be consistent with international law. Now, ICANN, you know, recognizes that it has to accommodate the concerns of the governments, even though they may not be well-founded in international law. So that's why we are where we are in terms of to the right of the dot, whether you can apply for, dot Sri Lanka or dot Kenya or anything else. But in fact, there were also some provisions made in the new GTLD program for how to deal with two-letter second-level domains that may be the same as the two-letter code for countries and so forth. So ICANN has tried to accommodate those concerns, but I think as a matter of international legal doctrine, I don't think there is a basis for national governments to make those assertions.
Can I have a question in the back?
Go ahead.
Okay, my name is Spencer Thomas from Grenada. I am the administrative contact for .GD. My question has to do with liability and immunity. Can the IPC or any of its institutions or individuals be sued?
Can any of ICANN can be sued and has been sued many times. I don't think the IPC has not been sued. We're an entity within ICANN. We don't have an independent legal standing, if you will, to be sued.
So, what the individuals that compose the IPC and the other institutions, can they be sued in their individual capacities? Do you have immunity provisions?
Here in America, anybody can be sued for anything. Oh. That doesn't mean it's a valid claim, but there's you know, there's nothing to prevent someone from coming into court with that. But I don't know. Do you think that we're doing something that might give rise to liability? I don't have any insurance for what I'm doing here. So, fortunately, in the last 16 years, it's been a theoretical concern, not a practical one.
Okay, I have a quick question. This is Zakir, for the record, an ICANN fellow from Pakistan. A very basic question, basically. I was wondering if the work of this IP constituency revolves around the names and numbers, or it actually has certain other areas, maybe content, the over-the-top content and stuff like that on its scope or agenda.
Well, within the ICANN framework, as I said, our work is totally on names, not on numbers. This question of content is a complex one, but I will say, that, for example, that the UDRP applies not only to registration of names, but it also applies to how names are used. And what is, you know, if you have a website to which a domain name resolves, that can be quite relevant in determining whether or not you have registered in or using in bad faith a domain name that's identical to a trademark or confusingly similar to a trademark. Similarly, if you look at, again, the new GTLDs and the public interest commitments, They talk about having a process for dealing with complaints about abuse in the use of domain names within those registries. That could include malware. That could include phishing strategies. That could also include piracy or counterfeiting. So how the domain name is used is relevant in a lot of these contexts.
Do we have one more in the back? And then, James, we're going to end up with you.
Yes. Carlos Rodriguez from Nicaragua. I wanted to follow the idea from Mr. Thomas, but this time backwards. I mean, if a registrant, for example, is breaking the law, doing some piracy, who is the one that's taking action against that registrant? Is it ICANN itself or another instance? Thank you.
The question for ICANN has to do with its contractual relationships. So ICANN has a contractual relationship with every registrar, every accredited GTLD registrar, and with every registry in the GTLD space. So the provisions I'm talking about, for example, the public interest commitments, those are part of the contract between ICANN and the new GTLD registries. So the question is, what does it obligate the registry to do, and what can ICANN do to enforce that? It obligates the registry to pass along through the chain an obligation to refrain from using domain name for purposes such as piracy, as well as other types of abuse. But if a registrant violates that policy and is using the domain name for piracy, ICANN doesn't have a contractual relationship with that registrant. ICANN does have a contractual relationship with the registry. And in theory, if the registry is doing nothing about it, that could be a violation of its contract with ICANN. So I hope that answers the question. ICANN really operates through contracts as a substitute for government regulation, for example. And therefore, it really depends on who ICANN has a contract with and what the obligations of its of the contracting parties are.
Yeah. My name is James Mtandwa Majiga, second time fellow from Zimbabwe. This is a question I could throw to you or even to ICANN legal department, and I suppose maybe you might be able to answer it. The question is on the speed of dispute resolution. Is there anything that is currently being done to speed up cases which have gone to arbitration? I ask this because it might result in a frustration for those waiting for particular disputes to be resolved, and frustration on its own also builds mistrust. So I'm throwing it to you. Is there anything that's being done to improve on standards in terms of speed of dispute resolution?
Okay. Well, the UDRP is a particular kind of dispute resolution of arbitration, and it was designed to be relatively fast, faster than litigation. And it is relatively fast. I mean, it may take a couple of months for those cases to be resolved. There is a demand for faster resolution, and that's why in the new GTLD space, there is the URS, the Uniform Rapid Suspension Process, which is supposed to operate faster in a matter of days rather than weeks or months. But it's reserved only for the very clear cases. If there's really any dispute about whether someone is registering a domain name in bad faith in order to confuse the public, if there's any real dispute about that, then that's probably not an appropriate case for the URS. The URS is very new, and one of the things ICANN is going to be doing over the next year is evaluating it, seeing if it works well and has it achieved its purpose. I want to draw a distinction between these cases, which have to do with registration and use of one domain name or a limited number of domain names. That's different than the process that ICANN has with an independent review panel for other types of decisions that ICANN makes. ICANN has set up a system where, in some circumstances, if a party feels that they are hurt by a decision ICANN has made, they can invoke an arbitration process to review that decision. That is much slower, much more complicated, and much more expensive. It's called the Independent Review Panel. And there's been a lot of criticism because of its expense and its speed and whether it can be improved. So that's one topic that ICANN is looking at now under the whole umbrella of accountability mechanisms. But that's very different than the UDRP or the URS, which really deal with the registration of one or a limited number of domain names in a particular registry. It's a much smaller scope, if you will, and those are a lot faster.
Steve, I'm going to say thank you very much because you have already given more time than we had allotted, and I so appreciate it for the number of questions that are here. So as I say at the end of every session, if you think of other questions for Steve, for the intellectual property constituency, and I believe, Steve, you get to step down from acting chair now.
Right.
And there is another chair in the House. We'll work out how they'll get responded to, but please feel free to send them to me, and then I'll make sure that they get through the path to get answered as a follow-up. Steve, thank you very much for your
time.
Thank
you very much for inviting me.
And with that, you're released, young birds. You're released. Finally, the day is over. I look at the tired faces back there, and it's like, oh, I feel for you. I know. I've been up the same hours you have and doing the same thing. Part of the joy of being an ICANN community member is, you know, 24/7. So the fun part is tonight we get at 8:30 to do music night, and I strongly encourage, I can't make it mandatory, it's something fun, but I strongly encourage you to go out, get a good dinner, and come on back to the big foyer area at the back directly across from here. It's a fun night. It's karaoke. It's bands. It just lets you let loose a little bit, and we all get to see each other in a little more of an informal fashion. And if you're lucky or unlucky, depending on how you feel about it, I may sing. So and I got to get my voice ready. So see you guys later, I hope. Thank you for the great day, you guys.